Our next speaker is Basim Chawe, longtime education activist in the Black Liberation Movement, and was featured in The Voice this week. He's the organizer of the Rajama Institute Alternative High School. I guess he's going to talk about some of that today.
Yeah, I hope we don't lose all of the young people. One of the very interesting things about this workshop is that there were many young people who came here. Unfortunately, most of them have left, which I think means something about the nature of the dialogue that did or did not actually occur. When young people are interested enough to come to a workshop on education, we have to give them something that they can leave with. And I think that many of the young people left before they could actually get anything. I think that there is theory, and then there is practice, and what we have to talk about, as someone else once said, is what is to be done. Let's begin with Malcolm. Malcolm, in his organization, the Organization of African American Unity, their basic unity program, spoke about the issue of education. And they said, as far as their basic unity program went, as far as education goes, after enslaving us, the slave masters developed a racist educational system which justified to its posterity the evil deeds that had said, as far as their basic unity program went, as far as education goes, after enslaving us, the slave masters developed a racist educational system which justified to its posterity the evil deeds that had been committed against the African people and their descendants. Too often, the slave himself participates so completely in this system that he justifies having been enslaved and oppressed. The Organization of Afro-American Unity will devise original educational methods and procedures which will liberate the minds of our children from the vicious lies and distortions that are fed to us from the cradle to keep us mentally enslaved. We encourage Afro-Americans themselves to establish experimental institutes and educational workshops, liberation schools, and child care centers in the Afro-American communities. We will influence the choice of textbooks and equipment used by our children in the public schools, while at the same time encouraging qualified Afro-Americans to write and publish the textbooks needed to liberate our minds. Until we completely control our own educational institutions, we must supplement the formal training of our children by educating them at home. Now, this was February 1965, over 25 years ago. And what it seems is that the problem is not having any kind of theory, but essentially having followed through on the ideas that have existed for several years as far as what we need to do as far as education goes. Ron Edmonds, the father of knowing but in doing. As far as doing goes, well, I have to agree with Dr. Hare here, as far as 1968 being a point of demarcation. It is since 1968 and the struggle for community control where we need to understand geographically that the major part of that struggle occurred in Ocean Hill, Brownsville, and Brooklyn, and not in Harlem. And that's not even being, provincial. But that since that time, that the schools have gotten progressively worse. And that we need to understand that the reason that that has happened is that as of 68 and continuing now with things like school-based management and the new teachers contract, that the union, the United Federation of Teachers, unfortunately, has been empowered to the detriment of our community. But the issue remains, what is it are we actually going to do at this point? In the spring of this year, myself and some people from the community took a proposal to the Board of Miseducation of what we considered to be something that needed to happen. We need to understand that since the majority of our children go to the Board of Miseducation schools, that we need to wage struggle very fiercely inside those schools to do as much as we possibly can in order to change them. Now, we will not always be successful, and the struggle is a rough one. People lose their jobs, your children may get thrown out of school, all kinds of things happen, but the fact of the matter is that struggle has to continue and has to go on. We came up with an idea for an institution that we figured would be revolutionary in the context of the Board of Miseducation, a school that had never before functioned under the auspices of 110 Livingston Street. We called that particular school the Ujamaa Institute, and we said that it was going to be an Africa-centered, multicultural alternative high school. It was going to be a prototype, a model that could be replicated across the city and other boroughs, and something that could also be moved down, as opposed to not being just a concept that would work as a high school, but a concept that would work as a middle school or an elementary school. Interestingly enough, through some political pressure that the community put on 110 Livingston Street, we got the green light to begin to develop this program. And from the spring into the summer, we started to do that. I started to do that. At this particular point, I think we need to talk about what are some of the elements of Ujamaa Institute. There was an article in the Village Voice this past week that talked about the all-black, all-male high school. And we need to first understand that the word Ujamaa itself means family or familyhood. And in order to have a family, you can't just have black males in a school to talk about that concept. So we have not talked about having a school that was exclusively black, for that matter, or exclusively male. The major things that we wanted to do in Ujamaa Institute were, one, we wanted to have a rigorous Africa-centered curriculum. And by rigorous, we mean, yes, educational excellence, because our children, of course, deserve the best that we have to give them and the best that the city can offer. And if we do, in fact, have schools like Bronx High School of Science and Stuyvesant, then we need to be able to create institutions in our own community which will offer our children an education that is as good as that which can be offered at Bronx Science or Stuyvesant or some other so-called specialized high school. Second, the issue of community control and parent involvement. Number one, as far as that goes, that the community was to be a part of this institution and that there would be a community advisory board which would be made up of scholars and activists who would be an integral part of the experience of the Ujamaa Institute. Also, parent involvement to the extent that when a young person came to the institution that they would have to first come with a parent, and that the parent would have to enter into some discussions so that they understood that there were responsibilities not only for the young people, but also responsibilities for the parents. Third, that there was going to be value-based education. One of the things we talk about very often, or some people talk about, is education as being value-neutral. And we know it's not value-neutral. One of the reasons why our young people run around acting stupid and crazy, as it is in many cases, and not in all cases, we need to understand that the majority of our young people are struggling and they're doing okay. But, you know, there are some young people who are out running around acting a little strange, and part of the reason they are doing that is because they went to school in New York City. And we need to understand that. We need to be very, very clear about that. So, one of the things we wanted to do at Ujamaa Institute is create value-based education. And we wanted to use the Nguza Saba, the seven principles of blackness, as the foundation for that value-based training. Fourth, as far as Ujamaa goes, we were talking about progressive pedagogy. One of the problems that we often have is that we talk about changing the content of what is done without changing the manner in which it is delivered. Now, I could be the most Afrocentric, brilliant person in the world, and if I got in front of a class and lectured to a high school class, guess what? They would walk out or go to sleep or do something, throw a book at me, and guess what? I would have deserved it. Okay? So what we have to understand that it is not enough to talk about just a change in content, a change in the curriculum, but we must also address the fact that we need to change the way in which we are going to deliver whatever information, whatever knowledge we in fact have to offer. The next thing we were going to do is that we were going to focus on the condition of young African American males. Now this is the thing that is, I guess, the most controversial piece, because many people think that if we're going to focus on that, that for some reason the only people who will come will be African American males. Now, let me tell you that the word, to an extent, has been out in the community, and that the inquiries I got about the Institute so far have all come from African-American teenagers, that they want to be in this school. Because for the most part, as we know, any of us who have gone to high school in New York or taught in high school in New York, we know that the high schools in New York are not happening. And anybody, I think, will be glad to go somewhere else if, in fact, we can do what we're setting out to do in regards to this particular institute here. The next thing in terms of an element that we need to talk about is that there is a community service component. One of the things that happens is once our people get educated, you know, either they want to leave and go somewhere else, or they are told that, hey, you know, you need to leave and go somewhere else. So that although they have gained some skills in education, they have never been able to use that particular education in their own communities. We need to change that, and the best way to change that is to begin by saying that, yo, we're going to engage in some dialogue and you're going to learn some skills, but you are going to use those skills beginning today where it is that you live. So that's an important component of this also. The other kinds of things that we're talking about, and there are a number of them, are things like changing the concept of what the school day looks like. You know, a 40-minute period in school means that it takes 10 minutes for the students to get in and 10 minutes for them to get out, which means that you only have 20 minutes to do whatever it is you're going to do if you're going to be successful in doing that. So what we've come up with is a way of restructuring time and doing it where we have two-hour interdisciplinary sessions twice a day, and that within those particular sessions we will deal with humanities first, and then we will be dealing with math and science. Because, of course, despite the fact that white folks would love us to believe that we are no good in math and science, we understand that, in fact, that is not so. So math and science, of course, have to be an integral component of what we're going to do at the Ujamaa Institute. The problem occurs is that, first of all, number one, in terms of its breadth and what we're talking about, this is a revolutionary concept. And that although there were many people at the board of Miss Education who said, wow, this is a good idea and we support that, all of a sudden, within the last few weeks, they are backing off. There were people who I could contact by phone very readily who all of a sudden are no longer available. There are people who are making strange statements at this particular point about, well, we didn't really hear about this, or we didn't really know what in the world was going on, and those statements are not true, and we can document that they, in fact, are not true. So over the next few months, I expect that there is going to be a major struggle over the issue of this Ujamaa Institute. We want to do this, and the plan at this particular point is to create this institution and get us going by the summer or fall of 1991 as a school that is run as part of a, quote, Board of Education school. The reason we want to do this is that we have to put the onus on the board for creating schools that work. And that if we can create one that works and we can show that it works, then we can create more than one that works. So that's the direction that we happen to be moving in. Now, there are many people at this particular point who are trying to do all different kinds of things. One of the things that people are talking about now is the curriculum of inclusion. And while I would say that there needs to be a struggle specifically around the issue of curriculum and a debate that must occur, that I am not here to debate with people like Diane Ravitch and Arthur Schlesinger and other racists. You know, not to debate with them that there are things that we must in fact do. Now, some of us may have to engage in that debate with Arthur Schlesinger and Diane Ravitch and Al. But for the most part, at this point, that they will probably paralyze us if in fact we debate with them, because all we will be doing is debating. We can get tied up in court, as Brother Bob Lowe, who I thought was going to be here, so we could talk about that as a strategy. And it is good, I guess, that he's dealing with a lawsuit so that we can deal with that. But those of us who have had experiences in court know what the courts in many cases are or are not. So whether or not the courts can in fact tell us what kind of curriculum we need is a question that I don't know has really been resolved yet. But what we need to do at this particular point is we need to, those of us who work for the Board of Miseducation, we need to go in the schools and we need to struggle fiercely, whether it's in your classroom or in the teacher's lunchroom or wherever you happen to be. you need to struggle to raise the kinds of issues that we need to raise on a daily basis so that African, American, Latino, Asian, and white children all get educated. Because the fact of the matter is, if we look at it, that as far as developed countries go, if we took the 15 most developed, so-called industrialized developed countries, and looked at their educational system and what happens, we would find that the United States would rank about number 14. Now that's not just as far as African-American people goes, that's as far as everybody goes, which means that everyone is in fact being shortchanged, and that we do not have students at risk, but we have a nation at risk. And the reason it's a nation at risk is because the schools cannot work. Just as drugs many years ago used to be a problem only in the African-American community, and then it became a national problem when Kennedy children got caught in hallways up in Harlem buying drugs. All right. In the same way, we find now that there are white children in the suburbs who do not get educated. So, of course, now education is a national problem once again. We need to understand that. And we need to understand that the only way we're going to make any kind of progress, quick, fast, in a hurry, is if we think about what Malcolm was talking about 25 years ago. We think about the history of education and educational struggle in this city, around the country, and around the world, and begin to create some kinds of positive, innovative, revolutionary programs where our young people can learn. Thank you. That's been pretty short, I think. Now we can talk.
Thank you.